Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with your host, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Alice Moon. I'm sure you've probably seen Alice Moon before. Big voice in the industry. She's worked in the cannabis industry since 2011. Worked everything from being a bud tender, marketer, blogger, and has a very powerful story as well, which we'll get into. So she's also the founder of Alice Moon PR. So thanks for joining us today, Alice.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, the pleasure's all mine. I really appreciate it. So, like I said, we're going to be talking about marketing in the industry, PR, and all that fun stuff, but also talking about your story, right, with cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome, correct? And the struggle with that and getting deep into that as well, and struggles of being an entrepreneur in the industry as well. But I guess, you know, as we always say, let our listeners know where you're based out of today. Keep it easy. Start easy.
Yeah, I'm based out of Los Angeles, California.
LA, that's, obviously my stomping grounds. Most people who listen to the show know we live most of the time in Tel Aviv, but LA is my home, baby. So I love it. And what brought you to LA? Are you from LA or where are you from originally? And
I'm originally from New Orleans. In 2010, I came to LA on vacation and then I never left.
Really?
Well, I just fell in love with LA and I just got a place and I planned on staying just for a few weeks, and it turned into 2 months, it's been 11 years now.
I love that. What brought you out? Was it just like, I want to go on vacation, or was there like a specific reason? And what was like the main thing that like you've kept you there this whole time?
I had just lost my job because of the BP oil spill in Louisiana. Lost a lot of jobs that happened. So I lost my job, and then I was like, well, I've got some money saved, so let me just go somewhere on vacation. And so someone I knew had a room for rent in Echo Park. And so I was like, okay, so might as well just come and try it out, see what it's like for a few weeks. And so, I just planned on just taking the vacation, and I just fell in love with just the diversity and adversity around LA. You know, you could just do whatever you wanted to do. The people are just amazing. There's such a variety of everything. And I fell in love with it. And so, yeah, it's been 11 years. And since then, my sister has moved out here and my mom comes to visit all the time pre-COVID. And so it's home now.
Wow, amazing. I mean, that's pretty hipster, you know, going right in Echo Park. I think like right now that's like where everybody, you know how it goes in LA. But 11 years ago, thanks for bringing more traffic, by the way. I appreciate that, you know. So I'm one of the unicorns born and raised in LA, but it's all good. LA is the best. It's open for everybody. And so now 11 years there, right? I mean, take me back also as well. I mean, with your story with cannabis, your story around cannabis, and obviously maybe a little bit different in New Orleans, right, than it, has been in LA, obviously that time. So talk to me a little bit about your story, your background in that regard as well.
Yeah. So in New Orleans, I barely consumed cannabis. I would have some pot brownies every now and then when a friend made them, but I was mainly a drinker. And then when I moved to LA and cannabis became accessible and I started smoking, and I realized that it was actually medicinal for me. It helped me with anxiety and depression and sleep and appetite. And it kind of just changed my life being able to consume it in that way. And it just helped me with so many different things. So I really just built a strong relationship with it. And then about a year into living in LA, I was working at a restaurant and the hostess was like, I'm going to go trim some weed later. Do you want to come? And I was like, yeah, that sounds pretty amazing. Like, please let me come. And so then I started trimming, and the man we were trimming for owned a dispensary. And I was like, I would love to work at your shop. And he's like, oh, we're all busy right now. We don't need anybody. And then about an hour later, he got a phone call and they caught their bud tender stealing on camera. And so he looked at me and was like, well, you've got a bud-tending job. And so the universe kind of just like made it happen for me. It just fell into my lap working as a bud-tender. And that started a long career in cannabis. That it's just crazy to think about my journey since then. I've done a lot since then.
No, I mean, that is definitely like the universe just opening it right up, you know, it's like coming in. And I think that's one of the issues, you know, when moving anywhere, right? And, you know, LA, big city, New York, anytime you move somewhere, it's always like, okay, what's next? When you see the doors just opening like that, right? It's like, gives you a sense of serenity, a sense of like, okay, cool, I'm exactly where I need to be. We should always feel like that, I guess, you know, but I love that. And so, I mean, what happened to the budtender there? Did they get in, they just got fired or what? I mean, it's unfortunately, it's all too common, right? Like you see that kind of thing all the time.
Yeah, they got fired. And I replaced them. And that shop, I was with them for, I believe, like 2.5 years. They had switched locations from, it was in Santa Monica. Okay, man. And they had switched from Santa Monica to Inglewood. And when things went to Inglewood, it got a little bit rough over there. And so I was with them at that location for about 6 months, but it was just too much stress on the owner. And it just didn't work out, but I moved to a different shop that I was with for like 3 years, after that. But during that time, I was also making jewelry. And I was making like hipster headpieces, you know, if you imagine like the ultimate, like Coachella hipster, I was making those types of pieces.
Like flower crown kind of stuff. Or?
Totally.
Yeah.
And the owner of the dispensary said, if I made something that appealed to our customers, that I could sell it there. So that's when I started making the secret smoker bracelet, a bracelet you could smoke out of. And I also made it into headpiece form too. So that was like my first company in cannabis, was making bracelets you could smoke out of. And I launched it under the Alice Moon brand. My shop is called Alice Moon. And I started doing that for about 5 years. I got the attention of LA Weekly and a few other outlets. And then during that time, I kind of like lost my passion for it after a few years of doing it. I had multiple employees all just making the bracelets, selling them. And so then I saw a need for edible education within the industry. I was writing edible reviews when I worked at the dispensary and educating our customers, and realized that people were coming to me asking me where they could find an edible, and I didn't have an answer for them. If it wasn't at our dispensary, then I had no idea where you could find it. So I sought out to make a tech company that was called Swallow, and it was like the Yelp of edibles, and help people find the right edible for them based on their dietary needs and their location. So if somebody was vegan, gluten-free, sugar-free, et cetera, they could go onto my platform and put in those specifications and find the right edible for them and which dispensary nearby carried it.
Wow. I mean, I love the way, I mean, first and foremost, this entrepreneurial spirit and the way that your brain works, right? Where it's like, see a problem, you know, find a solution, you know, as opposed to, you know, anything else. And I mean, I love that. So, I mean, what were the wristbands called?
Secret smoker bracelets.
Secret smoker bracelets. Cool. How do those even work? Like there are little pieces or something you could hit like on the low or something, or what?
Yeah. So it was a bracelet that I would weave like hemp around it. So it looked like a normal bracelet, and you could unscrew it and then you could hit it. And then you'd screw it. You'd wait for it to cool off, screw it back together, put it on. So it's perfect for Coachella because I put the flowers on the headpieces. And so it was like literally a headpiece you could smoke in, and you could keep a bowl packed. So you could walk into Coachella with your bowl packed and have it ready to go. Just take off your headpiece, hit it. And then, you know, you've got your piece right there for you. And yeah, I did that for a few years, and that was my baby. That was my firstborn company. I was really proud of what I did with it, but I ultimately had lost my passion for it, you know, making thousands of bracelets and running the team doing it. And it just like, once I got covered by LA Weekly, I felt like that I had success with it. And it was like, cool, I did it. Like, on to the next project. What can I do that's going to be bigger and even more powerful than this?
No, that's interesting. Is that always like, you know, because I'm always interested, right? Like entrepreneur, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, and the kind of that spirit, is that kind of like the what motivates you a lot of times, is like to like, you see a mountain, you see a goal, and then you achieve it, and then you kind of move on to the next thing? Or is there like something that's just like never achievable, never attainable?
I think it's attainable and moving on to the next thing. Like, I think there's a mountain that I can climb, and once I climb it, then it's on to the next mountain.
Amazing. Amazing. And then, like you said, the next mountain was what, the tech company Swallow, right? And it was a little bit, I mean, talk to me about Swallow a little bit. You said that, you know, there was this issue, you know, where people didn't know how to find the edibles. You already ran reviews and you saw this kind of thing. Talk to me here. You have this one, you know, successful company. Talk to me about Swallow and kind of what you learned from there as well.
Yeah. So Swallow, I spent 2 years working on it before we launched. So I put in so much love and labor into that company, and we were only operating for 7 months before we ran out of funding. And so with that, You know, with the company, we were nominated Best Tech by Dope Magazine in 2017. We lost to Weed Maps, but we still made it to the top four and got to go to the award show. We were covered by High Times and a few other platforms as well. And so I feel like I made it a success, even though it ended up being a failure. I did help a lot of people find the right edible for them. We had a database of 1,700 products within California. And so I feel like from that, I learned a lot about just time management, management of employees, how to get press for a company, because I did get us a lot of press coverage. And so I learned how to do press. Yeah, it was a major learning lesson for sure. And it's my proudest failure, I would say.
For sure. Were you, did you start that in conjunction while you're still doing the bracelets? Or what?
Yeah, I was still doing the bracelets while I started that. And then about a year into working on Swallow, I shut down the company, the Secret Smoker Bracelet Company.
Wow, amazing. Amazing. And I mean, you know, obviously everything's, objective, so to speak, and everybody's situation is different. But like you said, right, you say it's a failure, right? But out of that, you learned how to do PR. You learned how to do like those press, you know, and get everything from that, which is what you do today, right? So, I mean, on one hand, it's like sucks, you know, having to shut it down and, you know, taking that blow on the ego and everything like that. But on the other hand, it's like, if that wouldn't have happened, maybe you wouldn't be doing what you're doing today, right? Or how do you look at that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think if I wouldn't have done that, then I wouldn't be where I'm at today. Because when I was spending time promoting Swallow, I was meeting so many people and making a lot of connections. And I built up my network to be as huge as it is today. And that wouldn't have happened if I wasn't promoting that company. So I think that, yeah, it was definitely very important. And I was still buttending too during that time. And I was actually a waitress at the same time too. Like buttending never really paid my bills. So I was a waitress on weekends. That way I could like really fund my company. And I used to work like 70 hour weeks for quite some time, just trying to hustle and make it all work. Thankfully, you know, I only have to do like 40 hour weeks now, which feels so marvelous to not be pulling in that much weight. But yeah, I'm very proud of what I did with it. And another thing that I like people to know is that I actually dropped out of high school and never went to college. And I think that that like is something that like should inspire people. Like if college doesn't feel right for you, maybe it's not right for you. And maybe you can go and achieve your dreams in a different way. Because that's what I did. You know, I dropped out of high school, just started becoming a waitress. When I wanted to launch my tech company, I went to school of Google. I Googled everything. I studied former tech companies, what they failed at, what they succeeded at. And I just self-taught myself everything.
No, I love that. And thanks for sharing that too, because I think, you know, we live in a society now, right, where we talk about these things like failure with the company, where a lot of people maybe never even started a company. And here you are, already had multiple companies and all these, you know, and, you know, we talk about education and the need and people kind of, you know, compare themselves to each other based on these kind of superficial things. You know, I mean, I went to college, but I don't think I've ever once shown my degree to anybody. I've never like, you know, if somebody asked me, I mean, I could have just been lying this whole time, said I went to college and, you know, no one's ever actually been like that. So it doesn't really matter. I guess it just teaches us certain skills or maybe not, that may or may not be important. But, yeah, I mean, that's, thank you for sharing that for sure. Now, I mean, another thing too, you did this in 2017, right? With Swallow. And so you started working on it in 2015, I'm assuming, right? If I'm putting together the pieces correctly with, you know, if my number, is correct. And there you are, 2017, as you know, the industry is like, time works just differently with the industry, right? Where like everything just super fast, moves super fast. And like, that's already like an eternity ago, right? And now you see places like, you know, what Weed Maps has become now and Dutchy just getting all this funding and all that. Do you think like if you took Swallow from 2017 and put it like in 2020, 21, maybe the story would be different in terms of being able to get that funding, securing that funding? Or do you think it was just a necessary kind of thing, or how do you look at that?
I think I would have had to turn it into like a delivery platform or something like that, because just directing people to where to find the edible wouldn't be that monetizable in the long run. So I would need something more to it. So I think I would have to turn it into like a tech company that like delivers the edibles as well. And that, you know, requires licensing and a whole nother slew of things that I wouldn't want to get myself into. So I think it would only succeed if it was done a little bit differently this time around.
For sure. I mean, is it kind of like looking back, kind of like good riddance? Like, I'm glad it didn't work out, or kind of, you know, I mean, it seems like a lot, right? I mean, that's what being in the cannabis industry, it's always kind of like that. Like, sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to wish this on my worst enemy. Like, the stuff that we go through in the industry and the compliance stuff and everything like that. And then obviously having delivery and the licensing, everything like that, correct?
Yeah, it's all pretty crazy for sure. It's an intense industry to be a part of. I feel about it like I'm glad I did it, and I'm glad it's over as well, because it was a very, very stressful time in my life to be running a tech company and, you know, having to pay employees when I'm just hustling my ass off to even be able to pay them and do all that. And the most funding we had received was $10,000. So, you know, we've went a very far way in the amount of money that we had raised. In the grand scheme of things, $10,000 isn't much compared to companies getting $100 million these days.
Yeah, I mean, they're just like, you know, the series that people are playing in these days. You know, like I said, Dutchie, I think, just bought up like three other companies right now, you know, based on the funding that they got. I mean, I'm sure the people that got bought out or, you know, got acquired, I bet you they're pretty happy too with their exit. You know, you can take however you want it, you know, but yeah, so moving on, you know, so also, you know, one of the big things that I've been following along with you, you know, over the years as well is CHS, like we mentioned at the beginning, you know. I mean, here you are, you're a bud tender, you know, you have cannabis companies, you moved out west because, you know, and enjoying it. And one of the main things, like you said, it offered, you know, a kind of different lifestyle in that regard. And then talk to me about what CHS is, what that kind of situation, how it built up, like how it got here, you know, educate me a little bit as if I'm a 6-year-old and I know nothing, because I'm sure there's a lot of people who don't know anything. And I've seen a lot of backlash kind of like you gone as well as a result. So I'd love to just kind of hear kind of the backstory and kind of what's gone there, and we'll expand from there.
Yeah. So CHS stands for cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome, and it's a developed allergy to cannabis. Symptoms include nausea, vomiting, and abdominal pain. My experience with it, I started getting sick in 2016, and I would just randomly throw up and just be sick for a few hours, and then I'd be okay. And then a few weeks later, it happened again. And that was on and off for about 2 years until I got diagnosed in 2018. And I didn't want to believe it at first. So when the doctor told me that she thought that I had CHS, I was like, okay, I'll take a 3-month break, but first I'm going to go to an infused dinner that I'm invited to. So I was invited to this dinner up in the Malibu Hills, 5-course infused meal with a weed pairing. And it was just the most elegant dinner I could have gone to as my last meal with cannabis in it. And unfortunately, that started my 14-day episode with CHS, where I threw up all day, every day for 14 days straight. And it was a very, very scary experience to be throwing up that much, not knowing when it was going to end. Couldn't really find much information online about it. You know, the only articles out there were very sensationalized, very just like weed is scary, when that's not the case at all. I don't believe weed is scary. And I don't believe weed is bad, even though I have this syndrome. I think it's just a side effect that can occur. To take it back, I believe it started because I was writing edible reviews for years. I was consuming a lot of edibles, you know, only about like 20 milligrams a day, but that adds up if you're doing it almost every day for a few years, and the endocannabinoid system can get overloaded. And so I think I just had too many cannabinoids over an extended period of time and ultimately developed this syndrome that now I can't even smell secondhand smoke without getting sick. So I'm not sensitive to cannabis use. Can't touch it at all. It's been 3 years this month since my diagnosis, 2018. And since then, you know, I've played guinea pig, where I quit smoking for a few months, got better. Then I tried pesticide-free cannabis, because everyone's like, you know, it's got to be pesticides that are causing this. It's got to be pesticides. And so I tried that and still got sick. And that episode lasted 4 days. And then people are like, oh, you'll be fine with CBD. Try CBD. So I tried that. And then that was fine for a few months with CBD. But then ultimately that triggered a 16-day episode. And that episode landed me in the hospital. I got 2 ulcers, a hernia, and a bacteria infection from all the throwing up. And I nearly died. I was down to like 105 pounds. And I weigh about 150 now. So that kind of shows like the drastic amount of weight I had lost and just how skinny I really got. And it's a syndrome that is extremely serious, but it's not taken seriously by the industry. And it's really unfortunate. I was sick, you know, for 2 years. And if this would have been something that was at least talked about in the industry at some capacity, then I could have discovered it sooner, gotten better sooner, and potentially could still have a relationship with weed. But I fried my endocannabinoid system so much to the point where I can't touch it at all without getting extremely sick. Like, I've gone to cannabis events and then gone home and thrown up because the secondhand smoke got to me. So it's definitely affected my whole entire lifestyle, because I was a social, like going to events, you know, doing influencer stuff, all that jazz. And now I can't even like handle the smoke. And I mean, with COVID happening, events aren't really happening. So I'm not missing out on too much in the last year. But prior to that, I was missing out on a lot. And it really like affected me. And cannabis, as I mentioned earlier, was my medicine with anxiety and depression. So going through this whole process has been a huge mental hurdle for me, for sure.
Wow. I'm so sorry to hear all that. You know, I mean, that is, overwhelming. I mean, just even here, let alone, you know, imagine what you must have gone through, what you still go through, you know, and being around secondhand smoke and, you know, in the industry. And we know how it is. I mean, in the industry, you know, it's you're around it and, you know, you get past and everything. And I mean, definitely my thing doesn't compare at all, you know, but, you know, heavy user my entire life, not my entire life, but since 15, 16 on, you know, I'm 35 now. And somewhere around 30, I just like really, really start affecting my anxiety in a negative way, you know, and to a point where now I have to be really careful when use it, when not use it, what it is, this and that, and being really, you know, picky, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But I couldn't imagine what you've gone through. And especially, you know, like you said, you know, the industry kind of not being supportive, you know, is open-minded, I think, as the industry is a lot of times, and progressive and everything that kind of the industry stands for in a lot of ways, you know. I think sometimes people can be so overly protective because it also attacks like their own worldview, right? Like it also affects like their selves and their own use and everything like that. And in a world where we're asking for other people to grant us, you know, some leeway, so to speak, on in their judgments towards us because they may not use, you know, and we're, you know, we're adult users and everything else for whatever reason, you know, whether it be medical or otherwise, right? And then here you go, you know, people back giving you backlash because of this. You know, I saw that people were saying that it's not true, it's not real. It's like you were saying, you know, the pesticides, everything that goes on it. And it's just like, why, what does it matter either way? You know, for one, we think you're trying to bash the industry, you're trying to bash the plant, like, you know, or something like that, you know, in the sense of I see people talking about it in that regard. And with people talking about wanting a break in general, or for, you know, feeling mentally addicted or anything like that, you know, where I see just like a lot of awareness still has to come. And we talk about the stigma with cannabis, that people who have stigma against cannabis, but we also within the industry have so much stigma on the other way as well, which is, I think that's kind of the thing that I'm learning from your story.
3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
We at Calican are passionate about cannabis and CBD marketing, branding, SEO content, and web design. If you are a cannabis owner and you know you need an uptick in business, or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is this like protection around the plant where people are fighting so hard against prohibition that they just think that this could be a potential negative to the industry. And I think what would really be the negative is if we don't talk about it. And because some people have died from this, because all the excessive throwing up has led to organ failure. And I don't think we need more deaths on the hands of this. And I think if we talk about it and actually let people know that it's real, then they're going to believe it when their doctor says it. Because right now, when doctors tell people that they have CHS, a lot of people are like thinking that their doctor's just anti-weed and that they're just a prohibitionist and they don't want to believe it. And then they keep smoking and then they keep getting sick. And ultimately, you know, it leads down a bad path. Yeah, I'm in a Facebook group with 9,000 people who have CHS. And so we're very supportive. And, you know, people who say that this is rare, I think it's not as rare as we think. I think it's just not talked about, not known about. If I can be connected to 9,000 people myself, then imagine how many people are actually out there with it.
Wow. And I mean, obviously, you know, what kind of research is being done on this? I mean, with 9,000 people, I know it's more anecdotal or case study kind of things, but I mean, there's gotta be some way to get some better data on it and stuff like that. Right. And being able to bring out more awareness. I mean, is that something that's ongoing, or talk to me a little bit about that?
Well, since cannabis is federally illegal, the research in America is very hard to do. So there isn't really much happening in the research side, but in Canada, the University of Calgary is currently conducting a study where they're trying to see about different treatments for it. No one is looking at preventatives or the cause of it. They're just looking at how to treat it. Uh-huh. And there's a medication that is being successfully used to stop the symptoms, and it's called Haldol. And that medication is an antipsychotic. So with it can come a lot of negative side effects. I did a survey of 330 people who have CHS, and a lot of people were prescribed Haldol. And out of the majority of them who got prescribed, they were all saying that they wish they would have just been throwing up instead of experiencing the symptoms that that antipsychotic caused, because an antipsychotic in somebody who doesn't need it can cause psychosis.
Yeah.
And so people are experiencing psychosis, hallucinations, and just overall generally not feeling well. And so that is like now going to be like the main treatment for people with CHS when they go into the hospital. And so unfortunately, like that's the road that this is leading down, because that's the only research that's being done is like what can help. Hot baths help, but you can't really get a hot bath at a hospital, and capsaicin cream on the stomach helps. And that doesn't help for everyone. Haldol works a lot better than the capsaicin cream on the stomach. So research is lacking for sure. I'm happy to say that a doctor from a hospital in Washington, D.C. Reached out to me last week and said he's trying to conduct a study, get it funded by NIH. And if it gets funded, then I'll be a patient advocate on the study. But that is a lot of moving parts to see if it can even get done. We'll know by like August if that'll go through, and then hopefully we'll get some research into the actual cause behind this instead of just the fix for it.
No, definitely. And then like you said, you know, preventative thing, right? You said that, you know, this kind of symptom started a couple years before, and maybe if you had known before, it could have been prevented. Is there, you know, is that true? Like, what could you really have done, right? And in that regard, and, you know, and also another question, I guess, kind of piggybacking a little bit is, you know, you mentioned surveying people in your group, right? I mean, could be also be, have you done surveys on what their experiences were in terms of, because you were talking about edibles, you know, 20 milligrams a day, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And that you feel like perhaps that may have been the cause, whatever else. And kind of, you know, seeing, you know, survey of what other people, is that common, the edible thing, or what do people say? I mean, in those regards.
No. So the edible consumption isn't very common. Mostly it's people smoking flower heavily throughout the day. Smoking out of a bong was the number one way that people were consuming. Out of the 330, only 3 people were consuming only edibles. So that is a very, very small percent. Now, some people were consuming edibles with flower, some were doing edibles with dabs, but just 3 were solely edibles. I used to do edibles and I would smoke like half a joint a day, if that, but I was smoking flower too. I was definitely consuming the plant in many forms. I rarely did dabs, barely ever did that, and I barely ever smoked vape pens either. There's a small percentage of people who were doing dabs, but mainly it was flower. That was like overwhelmingly amount of people were just doing flower.
Wow. Wow. And it's heavy use, are there people in there that maybe were casual users and talk to me a little about that as well.
Yeah, the majority were heavy users, but there was a small percent that were using for less than a year, using just like once a week. So it is possible that it can occur for that, and for somebody who's using a small amount. And that's why I believe that this probably has something that like some type of genetic predisposition, that for some reason our genetics say that like we'll interact with cannabis in this way if we use it in a certain amount. That's the only thing that I can think of that would make sense, because out of this survey that I did, the only commonality that we all had was that we used cannabis. The amount that we used it, the duration we used it, the type that we used, like it all varied. And people were from all over the world too. This wasn't just an America thing. This is like all across the world, it's affecting people. You know, I have people in Italy, Africa, New England, wherever, just like everywhere. So yeah.
Wow. Wow. I mean, I just use the word fascinating because we're talking about your livelihood and your health and other people's around the world, but it's just, you know, to me, it's crazy, you know, and sorry to hear that, you know, like I said, it's really, really tough. And it is a little bit scary. I can see why people a little bit at times are like, you know, wanting to put up walls and wanting to kind of protect their own thing, right? Because it is scary in that regard. I guess, you know, how does it work, you know, now, you know, like you said, you know, being around secondhand smoke, you know, can affect, and obviously with the last year without the events and everything, maybe eased up a little bit. But how does it work, you know, being in the cannabis industry? You're obviously very passionate about it. You know, did you ever the thoughts like, you know what, like I can do PR for some other industry and not have to be exposed to this, but you continue to, you know, to be in the industry? What's the motivation behind that?
Because cannabis helped me so much before it started to hurt me. I saw as a bartender how many people cannabis helped. You know, we'd have people who were in their 80s who'd come in who were going through chemo, who used cannabis for the symptoms they experienced with chemo. And I think that the aspect of helping people is really what drives me and my passion with cannabis, is because I know it helps so many people, even though it doesn't help me anymore. And I've had moments where I've thought about leaving the industry, and I've had job offers outside of the industry working at a nonprofit that would have been a way for me to continue to help people. And I almost took it. And then, you know, a client came to me and was like, hey, we need some PR. And I was like, you know what? That's a sign that I need to stay in the industry. Like, it's just, it's meant to be. And so now what I do is I have taste testers. I have people who try products on my behalf. So that way I can still talk about products online. So because brands still want to give me products, you know, some of them just aren't paying attention that I can't use it. And so instead of denying it, now I say, sure, I'll take your products. And then I have my friends all try it and give me feedback. And then I can talk about the products and like be knowledgeable on it and still, you know, have the experience of like providing information on these products, even though I can't try it myself.
No, for sure. I mean, yeah, it's, I guess it would be good to be your friend then, at least, you know, little bit tone deaf with the brands, but you know, people, I guess, give them benefit of the doubt, got a lot of stuff going on, I guess, whatever else, but you're pretty out there. And that, I mean, that brings me to my next point, right? I mean, you know, we use these words, you know, in terms of a social media guru, in terms of like influencer, in terms of like all these kind of things, they're very much loosely, you know, thrown around, I think, in general. But you're somebody who I feel like has really mastered a lot of the art of social media and all kinds of different platforms, right? I mean, how did you kind of develop that? Was that just something that the skill that you developed over time, or something that comes naturally, or talk to me a little about that as well?
So with Instagram, when I was selling my bracelets you could smoke out of, that's when I built my relationship with Instagram, because I realized I could go through hashtag Coachella and like people's photos and they would go to my page and buy a bracelet. And so that's what like started the like aha moment of like, wow, social media is going to like drive my sales. This is how I'm going to do it. And you know, that was so long ago that I was doing that. And so I've just been on Instagram for, you know, almost like, was it 9-10 years that I've been doing it. I did have a following up to 16,000. But then I was deleted in 2016 because I was posting too much weed content. And that was like, you know, Instagram was not lenient at all back then. So I didn't get my account back. And when I got deleted, that's when I decided I was going to go and try to meet as many people as I possibly could, because you can't delete in-person connections. And so that's how I've grown, like to have such a large network, is from going to all these events and networking with people. And now my following is up to 11.5K on Instagram. But once I was deleted, I never put any effort towards growing it. It just has grown organically. And like, I put effort towards growing other people's accounts. I pay way more attention to that than I am paying attention to my own account. I just kind of learned just doing it, experience. I keep up with all the algorithm changes. I'm in a lot of Facebook groups, you know, I get email newsletters about everything that like changes, the TikTok reels and all that stuff, like everything. I just try to keep up with it all.
Sure. No, exactly. And as you know, Instagram's so finicky, right? I mean, it's just like, you know how it is. And Facebook too, with Facebook groups, people can grow their groups to be really big. And then all of a sudden they wake up one morning and it's gone, you know, and Facebook doesn't want to give them an answer and everything like that, you know? So it's just, you know, tech companies just deciding where, when, how, and not even giving any answers on why things are deleted and everything like that. And not having a good relationship with cannabis, obviously. And then companies like that. Now, you know, you do PR for companies, you know, you're out there, everything like that. Talk to me about the importance of PR. Why do people need PR for their cannabis company?
So a lot of cannabis brands have a really great story. They just don't know how to tell it. And that's where I come in to help tell their story to the media because they just don't know how to convey their message well enough, or they're too busy doing other things. They just don't know how to communicate with the media. And I think PR is very important to get a brand out there. It's how people discover you. You know, it's not just social media, it's magazines, it's articles, it's publications that help tell the story.
For sure, for sure. And, you know, once again, like, you know, Alice Moon PR, right? Why Alice Moon PR over, why should they come to you as opposed to some other agency? You know, give me a little toot your own horn over here, you know?
Well, I think the differentiator between me and other agencies is that I'm a one person agency. I have like some part-time employees, but it's mainly just me on the ground doing it. Whereas the other agencies out there are very large, and so they cost a lot more money, and they aren't able to give as much love because they are working on so many different companies all at once. So things are a little bit different, whereas I am just very, you know, a lot of love to my few clients that I have because I don't take on more than I can chew. So no hate to the companies that have like a zillion clients. Like, I'm proud of them for being able to do that. But differentiator is just that I'm able to just give a lot of love because I'm just a one person me. Basically.
For sure. No, definitely. And I mean, we deal with that, right? So with our agency scaling and being able to maintain, I love like talking to my clients. I love like, you know, I wish that there is a way to scale in the way that, you know, where I'm still, you know, talking, you know, I get calls from my clients all the time. I text them all the time. And I wish I could just continue to do that all the time, you know, as we grow and everything like that going on, you know, I can kind of see that, you know, that pull both ways. I'm in that regard now, you know, talking about all the obstacles you've been through, talking about all the things that, you know, the failures, so to speak, you know, CHS, everything like that. What's the biggest obstacle that you still face now, you know, in terms of either Alice Moon or Alice Moon PR?
One of the biggest obstacles I face with PR right now is that a lot of news outlets are turning into pay to play. And they want people to pay for the articles. And so that is like one of the things that I'm dealing with that is like a challenge, because my clients, I work with small startups and they usually don't have the budget to pay to play. They're paying for PR. I try to get them organic press. And now a lot of outlets are saying, hey, if you want this article, you got to pay us $1,000. And that's just not realistic right now. So that's like one of the biggest obstacles I'm facing with my PR agency. And then on a personal scale, I think my biggest obstacle is still trying to deal with my mental health without cannabis. I think that is the biggest obstacle that is like a work in progress every day of my life that a lot of people don't even understand that it's such an obstacle, because I don't like, you know, wave a flag that says, hey, I'm suffering, but I do have a lot of challenges not using cannabis.
No, for sure. And thank you for sharing that and for that vulnerability. I think, you know, like I said, we live in this time of social media. We live in this time of a lot of illusions, really, like a lot of smoke and mirrors, you know, and I think people are so scared to kind of share their vulnerabilities and share their ups and downs and share that. And I think that that's what makes the, you know, story, so to speak, so much more powerful. We can connect on each other on a real human level. Like, we can't connect with this phone, you know, we can't connect with this screen. You know, if you lose battery and it just turns into that black screen and you just see yourself staring at, you know, looking yourself back there, you know what I mean? But what is this? You know, it's all a matter about that human connection. Like you said, you know, you got Instagram deleted at 16K and having to, you know, say, you know what, like, forget it. Like, they can take this away from me, but they can't take relationships away. Right. So that's like the main thing that I think, unfortunately, we've lost so much sight of in today's day and age of just like, dude, how you doing? You cool? Like, you know, just like reaching out to somebody, just being like, yo, what up? How's it going? You know? And it's something that, you know, it's a struggle, you know, it's a struggle, because I think everybody, especially in LA, I'll be honest with you, you know, LA has a different kind of mystique, which is a lot of times amazing and a lot of times not so amazing, you know? And like I said, I'm a unicorn born and raised. But, you know, we can sit there with millions and millions of people, and you can sit there in our little pods in our cars driving in traffic and honking each other. And it's like we forget to realize that that person's a human being, that somebody's like maybe suffering. Someone's going through some pain. Someone's going through something. And why would I want to add to that in any way? So my heart, you know, is with you and anything you need as well, you know, you can always, you know, reach out, and I'll reach out to you over here as well, you know. But thank you for sharing that obstacle. And definitely, you know, as well, you know, on the other thing, you know, the pay to play thing, it's such a bummer. It's such a bummer that, like, this is what we've turned into as well, you know, in that regard, where it's like, here we are, you know. And I guess part of that is turned into as well, where people, the end user doesn't want to pay for the content anymore, you know, where, like, it used to be magazines, right? It used to be magazines, and you have to go to Barnes and Noble or whatever else and pick up a copy of something, and, you know, whatever else. So that's how they could get that in that regard. So their job was to get the best articles that covered the best companies, the best brands for that end user. And now it's almost like the end user is the brand, right? It's almost like the, you know, the brand getting it out there and being able to have the name out there, because people, you know, publications are asking you to turn off ad blocker, right? Because they need the revenue from the ads, and they need, you know, so it's tough, but it is such a bummer, you know, definitely hearing that's going on right now.
Yeah. And I encourage people to go to Barnes & Noble and buy a magazine, because the magazine industry is definitely suffering. People don't really buy magazines anymore, but there's a lot of really good cannabis magazines out there that need our support. You know, Cannabis Now, Cannabis and Tech, High Times, like those magazines, you know, I just really encourage people, go to Barnes & Noble, spend $30, buy 3 magazines, and show some support for the industry.
For sure. I love it. You know, I love it. I used to love going to Barnes and Noble, you know, getting a Starbucks and, like, just chill, you know, getting a magazine and everything. And, you know, somebody who's doing it right now, right? The homegirl, Madison Margolin, she's got Double Blind magazine, you know, so she's the same thing. She's got the real actual magazine. I was like, why would you do that? She's like, because I love magazines, you know? So,
yeah, that's a great magazine. That's a really good one. Double Blind is amazing. It's super educational.
Yeah. And she's great too. And amazing. Alice, you know, I really appreciate you coming on. You know, before I let you go, I always ask everybody who comes on the show, you know, you being an entrepreneur, and I always just, people's stories and what drives them is super important to me. So, you know, you mentioned maybe a little bit, you know, but maybe you can, how do you define success, right? Whether it be professionally, personally, spiritually, otherwise, right? What does success look like for Alice?
Wow, that is deep.
We're getting deep.
I don't know what success looks like, honestly. That's my first gut reaction, is I don't know what success looks like. I think happiness is part of it. I think happiness is a huge part of success. And once I feel fully happy, I think I will feel very successful. But I think it's kind of like a chicken and the egg thing, is like, might want to find success in my career in order to feel happiness. But I do have, like, feel like I am successful with what I'm doing. So I don't know. That one's a really hard one. I feel like that one is one that I'll have to sit on and, like, take some mushrooms and think about.
For sure. You know, open up a Double Blind magazine and take some mushrooms and think about that for sure. I guess, yeah, before that you run, I mean, so cannabis, right? So cannabinoids affect you, right? I mean, I was gonna let you run, but I mean, now I just open up a little bit of Pandora's box. What about, like, terpenes, or does that affect you? And other, you know, what about other kind of substances, you know, like you mentioned, mushrooms, LSD, anything else, you know, how does that anything else affect?
Yeah. So terpenes, I'm totally fine with. Some people with CHS can't have beta carotenophylline, because that's actually a dietary cannabinoid, even though it's a terpene. It is, like, the only dietary cannabinoid as well. And so some people have to avoid foods that have that, or they will have a CHS episode. Right. Thankfully, I'm not that sensitive to it. So I can have beta carotenophylline without a problem. It's just cannabinoids. No, terpenes are not a problem. And mushrooms are not a problem either. I haven't gotten sick on mushrooms thus far. I take them, like, once a month, and I haven't had any negative reaction to it. And LSD, I haven't experimented with, nor any other drugs outside of mushrooms.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. I mean, I love all that stuff. So anyways, you know, so definitely I would encourage you, that success, that vision, because you have, you know, so much to offer, Alice. You're amazing. So I really appreciate you coming on. And then next time I'll have to grill you more on that success thing, or maybe later on when we catch up for sure. But, you know, as we close, how can listeners find out more about you, connect with you, you know, connect with the Alice Moon PR, your services, company, everything like that?
Yeah. So my handle on Instagram is the Alice Moon T-H-E, Alice Moon. And I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter. My email is alicemoon@alicemoon.la. And my website is alicemoon.la. And one tip I want to leave your listeners with is, just so you know, Twitter and LinkedIn both don't censor cannabis content. So if you are a brand looking to talk about cannabis, those two platforms will not censor you. So those are good places to look for, to look towards, to post your content. So I just wanted to leave your listeners with that little tip.
For sure. LinkedIn's been amazing. I love LinkedIn. LinkedIn's my baby. What about Clubhouse?
Clubhouse is great. Clubhouse is not censored at all. So Clubhouse is another good one that's really great for connecting. It's just a little bit harder for some people to get into it. One, they don't allow Androids, so you have to be on an iPhone. And two, some people just don't have the time to sit on Clubhouse and talk all day long, you know? So Clubhouse can be a little bit harder to build your relationships, but I've built up a following of 3.5K, I think, on there so far. So I'm definitely enjoying my time on Clubhouse.
Amazing. Yeah, Clubhouse, you know, Clubhouse for me was I was on there for a little bit. I'm still on there a little bit, but it was so hard for me because, like you said, that time commitment kind of thing, you know, unless, you know, one thing I found was just like some people just pushing their way to the top, to the front. And then I was like, all right, listen, I don't want to, you know, kind of be like, for me anyways, my experience was that if I want to get on, I had to be a little bit more pushy, and I wasn't about that kind of thing. So gone off of there, but I still get some good content when I listen in and stuff, but I don't share so much. But Alice, wow, it's been amazing. I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much for sharing your story. It's definitely been eye-opening for me, educational for me. I'm sure everybody out there listening has gotten a lot from it. And thank you for sharing your vulnerability as well. You know, I think that this is something that we need so much more of. So I appreciate that. Thank you, everybody, for listening, wherever you're listening. And good luck to you in the rest of 2021 and beyond.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Dank Discussions. We are so grateful for each and every one of you. Please make sure you subscribe and leave a review. We want to continue making dank content you want to hear, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calacan.com. That's grow@calacann.com. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter for our latest updates.